Hi everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. This week we are finally talking about photography.
Hello Laura, how are you going?
I'm very good. I'm always good when I've had a big juicy painty day.
Yeah, I had a big juicy day yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been absolutely loving getting back into some botanical watercolour paintings, and they just feel like the, I don't know, just they feel like what I need right now.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way of putting it. But anyway, we're actually going to be talking about not painting today, but photography. And I was having a think about this because I can't believe we haven't done this episode before.
We've spoken about it a million times, but we never actually got around to talking about it, have we?
Yeah, well, you mentioned it yesterday, and I was like, surely we've had a podcast called Photography Tips or something like that. And I went down through our 86 episodes, and no.
Maybe you thought we'd done it before because we get asked questions almost every day of the week.
Yeah, and I mean, we mention it in episodes, but today we are going to chat specifically about how to take better photographs of your art and share our experiences with that. And one of the reasons I think it's so funny that we haven't talked about it is because your background is in photography. So it seems kind of obvious, but anyway, sometimes I miss the memo.
Yeah. It's always me with you.
Yeah. So anyway, this is Richie's moment to shine. I'm going to put the pressure on you now.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to ask you questions because there are things that I still aren't 100% sure about when it comes to taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this will help me too, because I take most of the photos for my art business and my feed and whatnot with my iPhone, and I'm always looking at how to get better at it. Before we get into the episode, I want to talk about the featured class for this month because we've just ticked over to a new class. So we're running a, for lack of a better word, a sale this year where we feature a class every month. And this month it is Flourish and Flow, which is one of our earlier classes. But I felt like this would be a good class to kind of bring back because, as I said, I've been back in botanical mode, and this class is all about painting floral motifs in your art. And I demonstrate a technique that I love, which involves using acrylic ink to create very sheer, delicate botanicals. And I show you how to do that on watercolour paper, but also how to incorporate it into a mixed media painting on a wooden panel. So it's a lot of mixed media, this class. There's creamy acrylic, there's pastels, there's paint pens, all the sorts of things that I love. And you'll see me paint two paintings from start to finish. So you can save 20% on this class at the moment, which brings it down to $28. It's a mini class, and the coupon for it is FF2020, and it expires on the 19th of May 2020. So if you've been having a look at my Instagram feed and seeing all these botanicals and you want to kind of get a little bit of a taste for how I approach those, hop on over and check out the class. I will be covering botanicals in our big course that's coming up, Modern Mixed Media, and sharing some new techniques, but this is a good way to get started. We've been getting some lovely podcast reviews. This one has come through from Lorac 12345678 via Apple Podcasts in Canada. This podcast is a refuge. During these unsettling times, listening to Laura Horn's podcast is a place where I can lose myself and find peace. Not only are we currently living in a pandemic where there is nothing but negativity on the news, but I'm navigating my way through this with a four-week-old newborn and a two-year-old, in brackets, Tasmanian devil. I think we had one of those kind of two-year-olds. I currently don't have the energy to indulge in my own creativity, but listening to Laura and Richie is uplifting, inspiring, and brings me joy. Thank you to the both of you. I can lose myself while folding laundry and cleaning the house. Isn't that lovely? And when I hear that kind of message, it's everything that we ever hoped for with this podcast. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sending in that review and for everyone else that sends us reviews. We really appreciate them. And it keeps us going, doing what we're doing.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, then, on to the topic. Photography tips for artists. Where do we start? Let's just say that you're in the studio and you've just finished painting for the day. Your table's all messy. You've got your art supplies out. You've got your piece of art. What do you do next? How do you take a beautiful photo of that piece of art?
Where do you start? Well, I guess you start by taking your camera out. So whether that's an iPhone, mostly it would be an iPhone, wouldn't it? Most people would take the photographs on
their
iPhone.
I think we're going to approach this episode primarily from if you're using a smartphone, since I think that's what most people use. And even if you have a DSLR, often for this type of photo, you don't necessarily get out your fancy camera. And you often say the best camera is the one that you have in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that approach. And we'll talk a little bit about DSLR towards the end of this episode.
The most important thing I could tell anybody who uses their smartphone for photography is that all cameras struggle in low light. So if you've just finished your painting and it's moved into the afternoon or the late evening and the light has diminished greatly, I would suggest that you don't take your photograph then. Wait until the next day.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
Wow.
Do you know how hard that is sometimes when you're excited and you want to take a photo?
I know. But if presenting your artwork in its best light,
mm-hmm.
notice what I just said there?
Yes.
In its best light?
Yeah.
Is to take the photograph of it in the best light.
Yeah.
So that's very, very important.
So what you're saying is that you should wait until you have your best light. Can you clarify what best light is?
The best light is soft light. So soft light can be found in the shade on a very bright day. Or if it's cloudy. So the clouds are in the sky and the sun is shining through the clouds and it's creating this beautiful soft light. So we want to avoid direct sunlight. We want to find somewhere nice in the shade.
Yeah, because what I've noticed is when you have direct sunlight, so if you try and take a photo sometimes in the middle of the day, particularly here in Australia where we have a lot of sunshine, you get those harsh shadows. It's hard to get that even lighting on your piece. And you can do cool stuff with shadows and things, but when you're a beginner and you don't know what you're doing, or you're just not even a beginner, but do you know, someone like me, I find shadows really hard to work with.
Yeah, so what you want is you want the light to be even across your art piece or whatever it is that you're photographing.
But it's interesting you said to take the photos in the shade, because that's something that I didn't realise when I first started taking photos. And even to this day, sometimes when you're taking photos and you'll pull our setup into the shade, so we might be taking photos of artwork on some wooden boards and I'll pop them out into the light and you'll pull them over to what to me looks like a dark corner. And that surprises me a little bit because I worry then, isn't the photograph going to be too dark?
When you say a dark corner, I'm not pulling it under a tree and it's just a shaded part of the veranda.
Yeah.
Or under the eaves of the house. That kind of thing. Now, it could be the brightest part of your studio, so long as it's not direct sunlight.
Okay. Not direct sunlight. Nice and even, soft light.
Soft light, yes.
Okay. All right. So we've got our photograph in that position, or, you know, we've waited until the time of day. And this is one of those things that I keep an eye on when I'm in my studio, because you'll get to know your space mm-hmm. and when you get that beautiful light, because I know at home that would often happen like early in the morning, there'd be a nice opportunity, and then again a bit later in the day. So I would know that there were these little windows when the light was nice and even. Okay, so you've got some even soft light. What do you do after that?
We get into the actual physical part of taking the photograph. When you're taking a photograph in natural light, you're dictated to by the sun and the weather as to where and when you can take your photograph. But when you've decided that you've found the perfect spot, there's a couple of things you need to do to take a relatively good photograph. Because we carry our iPhones or our smartphones in our pockets or in our bags, and you can do this now, you can take as you're listening to this podcast, just take a look at the lens on your camera. There's a very good chance it's scuffed. Or there's a fingerprint on it. So the first thing you do is you give it a wipe. So just clean it with a cloth, your t-shirt, whatever. Just give it a wipe.
I am so guilty of this.
Absolutely.
Okay, so clean the lens on your camera.
Clean the lens. And just as a quick example, like, have a look at your lens now. You'll see that there's fingerprints and marks and whatever. So we want to wipe that off. The second thing we want to do is we want to get the phone as flat as possible. So you don't want to be putting it at an angle while you're shooting down on your art.
Are you talking about when you're just doing a flat lay specifically?
A flat lay specifically. Or if it's on the wall, you want to be as horizontal and vertical as possible.
Because this is, sorry to interrupt, but I get to do that. Because this is something that I've always found difficult, is getting everything nice and square and not looking warped.
You can get various apps from the App Store, Google Store, that you can put overlays on your camera. So a lot of people will have seen the grid that you can put on your camera, like the rule of thirds.
Yeah.
But you can get some apps, they help you straighten your camera so it's vertical and horizontal perfectly. So that's a really good tool to use.
And you had a look and you found that feature in the Lightroom app that you use for editing photos, because we will talk about editing photos in this conversation. So you can use an app that has a spirit level that helps you to get it flat.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a video game. You have to line up the lines and then they'll glow green or red or yellow when you're all lined up, and then you take your photograph.
Okay. So that can help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing as well is to fill the frame with what you want to take. So you don't want any spare space. You don't want negative space unless that's what you're looking for. But you want to get as much of your painting into the photograph as possible, because it's all about your painting.
Yeah, I think that is good that you mention it depends on what style of photography you are going for, because I know many artists like to present their art with a very clean background. So it may just be the painting on a white background, beautifully taken photo that emphasizes the art. Or you might want more of a storytelling focus where you have some of your suppliers around you, bits and pieces, and I often call that clutter. You've got a bit of clutter going on.
So your art is in the correct light.
Mm-hmm.
You have your phone level. So what you're going to do now is you're going to stay as steady as you can. You're not going to take one photograph. You're going to hold your finger on the button and it's going to rattle off about 5 or 6 photos. The reason we do this is because the first photo you take, you might move your hand a little and it could introduce what we call camera shake.
Mm.
And the last photograph tends to be the same. But somewhere in the middle, you will find a very sharp, clear photograph. Now, professional photographers do this all the time. They take 3 shots and they pick the best one.
Wow, I remember you telling me this tip a couple of years ago, and I used to do it, and I haven't been doing it in the last year or two. I've just been taking single photos. Now, I take a lot of photos. Whenever I go to take a picture of one of my paintings, it's actually embarrassing how many photos it might take me to get something that I like.
Yes.
But I don't use the little burst feature where you hold the button down. So maybe that's something I could do in order to prevent me from taking so many.
Yes.
I might not need to take 20 then.
Yes.
Because I get shaky hands and things like that.
And what's also very important, when you think you have the photograph, like when you think you have it, look at the photograph, but don't look at the art.
Mm.
Look at what's in the frame. There could be anything in the frame. It could be your shadow cast onto your piece of art. You may have moved your hand and it could be a little bit blurry. Because a lot of people, I've done it myself, is I've posted something on social media and then it wasn't until I've looked back through the comments and then I'll look at the photograph and I go, oh my God, there's something in there that I didn't want to be in there.
It's funny, I always notice those things. Like I even say it to you sometimes, like that looks a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know, like weird stuff where you might have taken a photo of and you might have something in your background that's dominating in a way that you didn't intend it to, mm-hmm. or it could be like really stark white piece of paper that's on your table that's kind of distracting from everything else. So just looking for like weird things that stand out that maybe you don't want them to, you know, or like when you take a photo where you're in it and then something behind you is growing out of your head. You've taken photos where the lamp behind me in my studio looks like I'm wearing a hat.
Yeah.
you know, so it's just like looking at the whole big picture. Something that I just thought of, you're probably about to mention this. It's something I didn't realize when I first started taking photos. Seems really obvious now. But pressing your finger where you want it to focus.
Yes, that's very, very important.
And I still forget to do it all the time.
Yeah. Now, smartphones have very good autofocus software. It's not really an issue. Always, always do it because you should be telling that camera exactly where to focus.
That's interesting. And that's clarified it for me because I think I've forgotten many of the great tips you've told me over the years, and this is one of them. But I'm noticing that my photos are on the, as a, you know, generally they're turning out pretty well. So phones have come a long way, haven't they, as far as how they focus in. But it's still a good idea, as you said, to be in control, particularly when you're starting to do some more arty type photos and looking at, you know, things from different angles and making sure that the thing that you actually want to be in focus is in focus. Because I've definitely posted photos where the painting isn't in focus and something else is, like a vase or something, but I didn't mean it to be like that, you know. So they're those sorts of things.
So it's very simple. If you're in your studio and you have your finished piece of art, it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon, the sun is high up in the sky, you want to be taking your art outside of your studio. So let's say you're in your backyard and half of your garden is in direct sunlight and the other half is in shade. You put your art in the shade. You clean your lens. You level your phone. Tap for focus. And you shoot off 5 or 6 bursts. And you do 2 or 3 of those. And then you should have a nice, well-exposed photograph.
So you've mentioned about the flat lay type of photo. What about other kinds of compositions or ways of approaching taking a photograph?
Well, that's when you're getting into the storytelling side of photography. Mm. So your flat lay is if you want people to see your art in its truest form. So you're filling the frame and it's nothing but your piece of art. Then you have where you talk about people shoot their art on white backgrounds.
Yeah.
So they'll pull their phone away a little to allow more of the white background into the photograph. Now, that's a compositional choice, because they're thinking ahead of when they put it on their Instagram, how 6 or 7 of those photographs are going to look on their home screen.
Yes.
So they're making a compositional choice.
That's true, because a lot of artists are thinking about their Instagram feed when they're taking photos. And our Instagram these days is almost like a portfolio. So how you present your work on Instagram depends on, I guess, who's looking at your work. Yes. What your objectives are. It's different for me than it is for other people. If you are trying to seek out gallery representation, then the way that you present your art, what you want to show is how it would look when presented in a gallery space or in someone's home. Whereas as an art teacher, I want to encourage people to create. So my photos are much more about the feeling of making art and how enjoyable it can be to experiment and splash paint around and let go and lose yourself in the painting process. So it's a different kind of vibe that I'm...
Yeah, but you also, if you're taking these photographs, and I'm assuming because we're talking about smartphones, you have to forgive me if I keep saying iPhone. It's because I carry an iPhone. When I say iPhone, I mean smartphones. When you hear me say things like filling the frame, without getting too technical, talking about sensor sizes and megapixels, if you fill the frame with your photograph and you don't have to crop, you retain the image quality. Because when you crop an image, you're cropping away megapixels.
Yeah.
So it can affect the quality of the photograph.
So you want to get it as close to how you imagine the photo being at the end.
Yes.
In the frame and avoid cropping.
And avoid cropping as much as possible.
So you talked about the choices we make for the Instagram feed around what kind of photos we present. And I mentioned that I like doing a quite busy sort of flat lay that shows a lot that's going on as far as my process. Especially with Instagram, there's an opportunity to provide a few photos in a carousel and tell a bit more of a story. And so I also like to include close-up photos.
Yes. Well, in photography and in filmmaking, all photographers and cameramen will do three types of shot. We do an establishing shot, which is a wide shot. So the ones that people will see on your Instagram, we tend to always start with an establishing shot. So it's top down, painting, and everything that went into it, because they look amazing. So it's kind of like when you go to the cinema, the movie starts with this big wide scene of a small house on the top of a huge hill. It's this establishing shot. So you get brought into the scene by seeing everything that goes in, but there's nothing in detail. It's just all laid out in front of you. Then we do what we call a mid shot. So a mid shot is when you kind of punch in a little bit closer. So you want to get rid of some of the clutter. So let's say we take a photograph of your table with the art in the middle with all the clutter around it. And then we'll punch in just to the art itself. And then you have your close-ups where you'd go in and look at a specific detail on the painting.
Yeah, and you're taking people on a journey.
Correct.
Through that.
You're telling a story.
I absolutely love that approach. And sometimes artists also want a photograph of their art without any background at all.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned backgrounds three or four times now. Yeah. And backgrounds are very, very important, because the background is what makes your art stand out. Now, if you have black on black or white on white, that's a very specific look that you're going for. We like to shoot on timber. We like to shoot on wood. So we have very specific backgrounds that we use.
Yeah, but we're always experimenting and trying new ones. Sometimes I wish we'd be a bit more consistent with the backgrounds. But we've been on a process of discovery, just like everyone else, trying out different things. But I particularly love that more rustic kind of vibe. We also have some whiteboards. You actually put another coat on them the other day. So you made those with wood from pallets?
Yes, yeah. Broken up pallets. And yeah, we just laid them down and we paint them various colours.
Yeah.
And then we sand them back to give them this kind of used rustic look.
And they're very handy to have. We've had all sorts of different boards over the years. One of the things that they allow is that you can put your art onto them, set up the shot, you can add whatever you want in the background, if you want to have some art supplies, or I often like to use bits of nature because I draw a lot of inspiration from branches and twigs and things that I collect from around the garden. So we often pop those in because I always have them on my desk anyway.
Props are very important.
And they're props as such. Mm-hmm. But you can also move the board. So earlier in this conversation, you were talking about coming out of your studio and finding a spot in the garden somewhere. Well, you can't do that with a table, but you can do that with a board. And they're very versatile in that way because you can chase the light.
Yeah, and it only needs to be big enough to accommodate your art. So you don't need this huge, big board. You just need something that's a little bit larger than A3. Granted, we have bigger boards, you know, we go meter by meter.
You might even be able to find something at a salvage yard, or if you went somewhere like that. I'm just thinking of options. I've seen people use other things like bits of fabric, linens and stuff like that, mm-hmm. carpet. You know, yeah. If you have nice, vintage carpets and things, they can look really nice.
You want to avoid as much as possible busy backgrounds. At the end of the day, it's to complement your art. It's not to take away from your art. When someone sees your photograph on your Instagram, the last thing you want them to be doing is noticing the background first. Oh, look at that beautiful carpet. Oh, and the art is nice too.
Yeah, I suppose I took a photo on the carpet in our studio the other day, but it's beigey off-white, but it's not anything that's super distracting. Personally, I'm all about the props. I love photos that have bits and pieces around them. And it's not hard as an artist because you often have all these things that they're just gorgeous anyway. So you've got your pastels and your paints and maybe a journal or some writing that you've been doing. And I also love seeing like hands and feet and just little snippets of the artist as well. So props props make a big difference. They take your photography to another level, and I truly think it is that storytelling side of it where you're sharing other little details. You know, we often have photos where you can see the mug that I've been drinking my tea out of and just little bits like that. And, you know, there'll be gum nuts on my table, or petals from flowers that I've had in the studio. And to me, it just makes it all a little bit more interesting, so that instead of just flicking quickly, you find yourself kind of looking a little bit more into the photo.
Yeah, you're personalizing your photograph. So what you're actually doing is you're creating a style of photograph around your style of paint. And a lot of your listeners are artists themselves. So be as arty and creative as possible.
Yeah, because we're always talking about style, and we talk about style as far as art a lot, but the style of your photography actually plays a part in that, because people see how you present your art and they associate some of those things with your overall presence as an artist.
Yeah, and your storytelling as well. When people come to your Instagram page or they come to your website, seeing your art it's always nice to see the finished piece, but it's always really cool to get inside and see. You know, sometimes you may have a question in your head, how did she do that? But then in the photograph, you can see a pastel or a Posca pen or a scraper or a sponge. Like the answer to your question is in the photograph.
It's so nice to get an insight into the lives of artists.
Yeah.
I mean, I am endlessly fascinated by by that topic. I love to know if artists paint in the morning or whether they've had a good day in the studio,
yeah,
and you can feel their excitement, or maybe it's been a challenging day and this is the best I could do. I love all that. I love seeing the full picture.
Yeah. So when you're telling your story, if you can not even think about the technical terms, wide, midi, close.
Mm.
If you could just think about your story as materials, so that'd be your wide shot.
Mm-hmm.
The art itself, that would be your mid shot. The close up would be a technique in your painting. So if you've done a wet and wet, or if you've done a scrape with a spatula, if you've done some kind of mark making, well, that would be your close up shot.
This isn't really a super technical conversation. There's a few great pointers that will make a difference. But a lot of this is about emotion and connection. And it's an opportunity for you to share your story and a little bit of your personality with others and let them in. I really like your way of describing, you know, taking like an establishing shot, then taking a shot that's focused in on the art, and then taking a photo of a technique or a tool or something like that. So maybe even just thinking about those three things and playing around with that could get you on that path to taking more photos, getting more confident with it.
Yeah, and the great thing about it is if you think about those three shots, the first shot, which is your wide shot, when you've taken 100 of these, you'll be saying, oh, I might experiment with a different background. When you do your mid shot of just the art, then you'll start playing around with borders, props, a few little things here and there. And then when you do your up close shot, your mind will start to go, well, maybe I don't need to do an up close shot of the technique. Maybe I could do an up close shot of the tool that did the technique. And then all of a sudden, your mind starts to play around with all of these storytelling techniques that add to the story.
Last week's podcast with Inga Buiva, she talked about using backgrounds, and for a while she was using wooden boards and things like very rustic look, similar to what we like. But Inga said that it didn't feel like her, and she's recently changed over to more of a sleek, clean, modern style. I think that's wonderful that firstly that you can change and experiment, because we all go through different phases. Also that you can choose what feels good for you, and share your personality and what you love. And that's what I think makes a difference, because then people can get to know you.
But it's like everything else creatively. You know, you'll go onto your favorite artist's Instagram page and you'll say, what are they doing? I'm going to do that.
Mm.
But then you start doing it. And then at some point you'll say, oh, well, this isn't me. It's them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to change.
Yeah.
I'm going to paint my background a different color.
Yeah. And you might look around, you know, look at what you decorate with, what you enjoy in your home, what kind of buildings you like. That might give you some ideas, what kind of architecture, and then bring that into how you present your photographs. All right. So we've covered quite a bit. What else? What did I want to ask you? I wanted to get a little bit techie here, because I find this hard to understand sometimes, and I'm not quite sure what I'm doing with all the different options that you have for editing a photo. So let's just say that I've taken a photo in my iPhone and the light's been nice and even. I've got a background. I'm pretty happy with how it's all turned out. The thing that I'm sometimes not sure about is the editing of the photo. And I feel like I've got overwhelmed looking at, I guess, blog posts and YouTube videos and all the different editing software that's out there and the apps and the filters. I just feel like it can be a bit of a scary place. How could we help people without overwhelming them as far as editing a photo using the basic adjustments that are within the smartphone rather than apps and filters and things?
Without getting too technical, I'm just going to use a term called dynamic range. All dynamic range means is how much of the shadows can you see and how much of the highlights can you see. As human beings, we can see the clouds in the sky and the flowers in the shade under a tree at the same time. So we can see into shadow and we can see into highlight at the same time. Cameras can't do that. Cameras can either see in the shadows and not see the highlights, or they can see the highlights and not see the shadows. So when you take your photograph and you go to edit that photograph, have a good look at it. Is it even all the way across? Can you see the black lines in your art? And can you see the lovely white dots of your mark making?
So you're suggesting that you have a look and see if you can see the details.
Correct.
In your art.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you can, you've done a really good job, right? That's why we bring our art into the shade. So the light is even across the entire piece. So the camera has the opportunity to see the white dots and the black lines.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense.
Yes. So when you take your photograph and you look at it on your phone, you will see a little edit tab. So when you hit the edit tab, the very first thing that comes up is your exposure. And that allows you to lighten or darken the entire photograph.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes the background and everything. So you just have a little adjustment there. Do you want to darken it?
Yeah.
Or do you want to lighten it?
I find with that one, just moving it across just a little bit each way, you can usually just see the sweet spot. You can just see where everything looks like it's about right.
Absolutely.
If you've taken your photograph in nice, even light, you don't usually need to move it too much.
But you may want to. You may want to just give it a tiny little adjustment.
Yeah, so I often find I still need to nudge it one way or another.
So as you move along these tabs, you will come across one that's called saturation. And saturation is just basically, if you pull the saturation slider all the way down, you now have a black and white image. It just pulls all the color out. So if you go the opposite way, it just really introduces, so it makes the reds redder,
yeah,
the yellows yellower. If in your mind, you're looking at your image and you say, oh, I'd like that painting to be a little bit more poppy, you can just add a little bit of saturation into it, if you choose to.
Yeah.
So the next couple of settings, you may have highlights and shadows.
This is the one that confuses me the most.
Yes. So again, remember what I said to you. The camera can't see highlights and shadows at the same time. So what we want to do is we want to bring the highlights down a little so you get more detail in the highlights.
Okay, so when you bring the highlights down,
it brings out more detail in the highlights.
Okay.
And when you bring the shadows up, it brings detail into the shadows. Now, without getting technical, Without getting too technical, even though the guy in the shop said that your new smartphone is 7 million megapixels and it's the best camera ever, it's not. It has a tiny sensor. So when you start experimenting or you start pushing these sliders, you will destroy your image. It just doesn't have the resolution to be edited too much. So when I'm talking about making these adjustments, I'm talking tiny, tiny adjustments.
So are you talking about, you know, maybe 20, is that what the number can be?
Tens.
Like 10s and 20s, yeah. Yeah. Like just little adjustments.
Yeah, the first notch.
Yeah.
But okay. Then again, it comes down to your taste.
Yes. This has all got to be couched with, it's down to your personal preferences in relation to how you want your photos mm-hmm. to look, which is a whole subject in itself.
That's right.
But this is just, I guess, trying to keep it simple and explain even what those settings are. So if we put our highlights down and our shadows up a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
It might help us to see the detail of the photo.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then further on down, you'll see one that says temperature. If anyone ever had a camera, they'll know about the little settings they see. You know, you have the setting that's a house, which means indoors.
Oh,
and then
yes.
You have the setting, which is a cloud, which
yes.
means it's a cloudy day.
Yeah.
Or the sun, which means it's direct sunlight. They're called white balance settings. So you're telling your camera what kind of light you're in. If your photo is looking a little bit yellow, pull the slider down towards blue.
Yeah.
And it just neutralizes it.
I use the temperature setting quite a bit because depending on what time of day you take the photo, you can get sort of a variation in mm-hmm. how your photos look. And particularly when I am curating them for Instagram, I try and have similar kind of warmth to my photos. So I might find that I need to up it a little bit. Sometimes I need to lower it. So I play around with the temperature to get my photos consistent if I can. I do have one more question, and that's around vibrance. I've never understood the difference between vibrance and saturation.
Yeah. Saturation is how much color is in the image. Vibrance is how bright that color is.
Is that different to brightness, or is vibrance the same as brightness? Because
brightness is like exposure.
Okay.
So brightness will lift the brightness of the entire image.
Right.
Saturation and vibrance are directly associated with color. So do you ever notice the way you have saturation, brightness, blacks and whites?
Yes.
Yeah. Black is for black, white is for white. And saturation and vibrance are for all the colors.
So can you just explain again to me the difference between saturation and vibrance?
Saturation is the amount of color.
Yeah.
So if you have a red and you want it to look redder.
Okay.
Then you move the saturation up.
Yeah.
But if you want that red to look brighter, you would use the vibrance.
Yeah. I've always been a bit uncertain about
that. Yes. Now, the more experienced you are, the better your software, you can target each individual color individually.
Yeah.
So, but that's too fancy for us today. Yes.
All right. That's brilliant. Is there any other settings we need to know about?
No. That should get you started.
A lot of it is just pulling those little, I don't know what you call them, the settings.
The sliders.
The sliders, yeah, that's the word. Pulling them back and forth and just noticing what happens and seeing whether you like the look or not.
Yeah. When you first start photography as a photographer, and it's kind of like one of those ongoing industry memes and jokes, you know a beginner photographer because it's always oversaturated. But then you know he's getting a little bit better because it's not as saturated, but it's like crushed in the contrast until you eventually start finding your style. And it's amazing how accomplished photographers have more natural looking photographs.
Yeah, that's interesting because when I first started posting on Instagram, I definitely would just up the contrast, up the saturation.
Yeah.
Like everything would be really like,
punchy.
Yeah, overly punchy.
Yeah.
And lose some of that detail because of that. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because when I first started using flash photography, I was like, I wanted people to know that that photograph was taken with flash. But when you talk to an expert, they're saying, no, the idea is to light it in such a way that people have no idea you used the flash.
Mm.
It's to look natural.
Yeah, it's interesting. I often get asked like if we use lights for our photography, and
very rare we try our best to use natural light.
Yeah, even when you're taking photos with the DSLR, it's all natural light, and a lot of what we've talked about today still applies as far as how you approach photos when you're taking them with your fancy camera. Which leads me to one thing I wanted to mention. This has turned into quite an epic podcast. Yeah. Richie's got a bit of editing to do now. Yeah. But I just wanted to cover off on a couple of questions that we often get asked.
Yes.
So one of them is, do I need a DSLR if I want to take, if I really want to take nice photos of my art? Well, is that where I should be heading?
Yeah. I mentioned it earlier on that the guy in the shop might tell you that your camera is and your phone is the best camera ever. The best smartphone camera cannot hold up to one of the worst DSLRs. And it's just purely because of the sensor size. You know, the sensor in my camera is half the size of my entire phone, where the sensor in my phone is less than half the size of my fingernail. So there's no comparison. The only problem with a DSLR, although it gives you amazing images, is that you need to learn how to use it. You can put it on automatic, but if you're going to put it on automatic, you still have to go through all of finding the correct light, your composition, it's all the same. If you're taking this, if you're listening to this podcast and you're going to take on board what we're saying and you're going to do what we suggest in 6 months' time, you might be saying to yourself, I need a better camera.
So it's really about whether you've got the inclination and the desire to learn how to use the DSLR. And then if you do, it might be a natural step once you've spent some time doing this and you've got very good on your iPhone, then it might be a natural step to get a DSLR. But if not, I would be saying do what we've said in this episode, get better at taking photos on your smartphone. And if you can, hire a professional for some photographs for your website, or if you've got paintings that you want to turn into prints or something like that. There are things that your smartphone cannot do.
Yeah, so imagine if you went to the supermarket now and you bought the cheapest watercolor paints ever and you gave them to me and said, right, Richie, do a painting for me. And I was to spend an hour doing a painting. And then you came back and you said, right, now, I'm going to take those colors off you and I'm going to give you Daniel Smith colors. Paint another painting. Is my second painting going to be better than my first? No. It doesn't matter what paints you give me or what paintbrushes you give me, because I don't know how to paint. So if you rush out now and buy a DSLR, you're still going to be taking photographs in the wrong light. They're not going to be level. Your composition's going to be like... Do everything you can with your iPhone. You will get amazing content with just your phone.
Yeah.
DSLRs are for when you're ready to take the next step or whether you're looking at digitizing your art.
Yeah. We talked about editing the photos. The question was just, what do you use to edit your photos?
Oh, I use Lightroom.
And I use Lightroom as well.
But I often use the app on the phone because sometimes it's good enough.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Sometimes I just do it in my iPhone. I do like taking the photos through the Lightroom app.
And it's free.
Yeah, so the Lightroom app is good.
Have a play around.
Yeah.
I will say this. Don't spend all day painting a beautiful painting and then stick a filter on it. Don't do that. It's lazy.
You couldn't help yourself. You needed to go there.
Yes, yes. No filters, please.
Richie doesn't like filters. We don't use filters at all. So there you go. We just do the edits in the basic smartphone app or the Lightroom app. I also wanted to ask whether it would be worth investing in a tripod.
Absolutely. Tripods can do a multitude of things that you can't. So if you just forget about photography for a moment, if you want to do a time lapse, if you want to film yourself doing any art, or if you want, which is an awesome idea, is to take a self-portrait. So if you want your hands to be in the photograph, put it on a tripod, hit the self-timer, put your hands in and take the photograph. So tripods are very important for storytelling, but from the actual technical point of view, if your camera is on a tripod, there'll be no camera shake. You only need to take one photo.
So a tripod would be a good, good investment at this point to play around with your iPhone.
Yes.
It gives you lots of cool options
it
like
does.
Time lapses, taking photos with your hands in there, things that might be difficult, particularly if you're on your own and you don't have someone that can help you.
And some tripods have little levels in them. They have little bubbles.
Ah, so we can get that.
Yeah, you can level it and you can make sure it's perfect.
All right. I don't know if you know off the top of your head any tripods that are good for smartphones, any brands. Is there anything you could suggest?
There's a multitude of different tripods you can get, but because you're only putting your phone on it and not a $10,000 camera, you just need a regular tripod from eBay.
The one that I use, you picked up from Cash Converters, secondhand.
Yeah, got it for $25, bought it in a used surplus store.
I couldn't tell you what brand it is.
Neither could I. It's old, but it's really good.
Yeah, so just search on eBay then or something similar and put tripod for your iPhone and pick one and use that along with all the other suggestions that we've included in this episode.
Hope it makes sense.
I'm a bit worried now. Yeah. We've like rambled on for ages.
Oh, God.
Maybe this is why we hadn't done this episode, because it's actually quite a tricky thing to chat about in a podcast format without sort of demoing and showing what we're talking about. But I will try and put some photos in our show notes this week to demonstrate those three types of shots that you talked about.
Yeah.
And it'll also show like what we use for backgrounds and things like that. So you might be able to get a few ideas, or head over to my Instagram at Laura Horn Art and you'll be able to see a real mishmash of photographs. Some of them are me learning, some of them are Richie's, and you might get some ideas there too.
Yeah, and just remember that although you can almost tell which photographs are taken by me and which photographs are taken by you, it doesn't change the amount of likes or the amount of comments. If the photograph is well taken, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true.
The reason it's important for you to take really good photographs is because you could take a beautiful piece of art and just show it in the wrong light.
Yeah, because that's exactly what this is about. At the end of the day, this is about sharing your art and what you create in its best possible light. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you want to check out the show notes, they are over at laurahornart.com/the podcast/87, because that's what this week's episode is, number 87. Can hardly believe it. I just want to say thank you, everyone, for tuning in and for sharing your stories. I know that many of you are listening to the podcast during this challenging time. And maybe this week you might be able to experiment a bit with your photographs. So share them and tag us in them so we can have a look too. Don't forget as well that the Flourish and Flow class is on sale at the moment. You can find that over on my website, laurahornart.com/classes. And if you look up Flourish and Flow, the coupon for that is FF2020. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and I hope that you'll join us again next week.